name is Anwar Al-Awlaki, and it, the name is spelled two different ways, typically A-L-A-W-L-A-K-I. He's born in New Mexico. He is a Yemeni cleric. He's 39 years old, born in 1971 in the United States.
Let me jump in real quick. What, was he born with that name, or did he change that name when he became Muslim?
No,
was he born
Muslim? He's an ethnic Yemeni with that name. And anyway, his the New York Times reported, just to give you the kind of the latest little thing again, as they say in Dr. Strangelove, my source is the New York Times. Right. April 6, 2010, headline, U.S. approves targeted killing of American cleric. My brother Scott Shane, headline again, Obama administration is taking the extraordinary step of authorizing the targeted killing of an American citizen, radical Muslim cleric Anwar Al-Awlaki, believed to have shifted from encouraging attacks in the United States to directly participating in them. And he is believed to be the first person, at least anyone's admitted to have this kind of double O treatment,
right?
You know, shoot to kill. Now, let me just give you some of the background before we get to the three the most recent incidents of terrorism or attempted on the U.S. homeland. In 1999, the FBI begins investigating the Charitable Society for Social Welfare, a U.S. branch of a Yemeni charity founded by Sheikh Abdul Majid al-Zindani, a Yemeni imam who the U.S. will officially designate a terrorist in 2004. Who's the vice president? Anwar al-Awlaki. So this is 1999. This is long before the 9/11 attacks, okay?
Right, right.
Cut to January of 2001. When Al-Madar and Al-Hazmi, these two incredibly visible guys who became the among the muscle hijackers on American 77 that flew into the Pentagon, they got into the U.S. and they were in Los Angeles. They were reportedly met by a guy named Bayoumi, who was reportedly linked to Saudi intelligence, but the Saudis tried to deny the, you know, obviously, you know, distance themselves from that. But this guy Bayoumi helps them in Los Angeles, and they go to San Diego, and they're directly helped by Anwar al-Awlaki. He aids and abets them. He helps them get housing. And here's the first hint of why the FBI really doesn't want the full story to come out on this guy. They end up living in the home of a guy named Abdusadr Sheikh, who was an FBI informant. Okay, this is in 2001. They're highly visible. They go to the mosque. They register a car. They get tickets to SeaWorld. They put one of them has his name in the phone directory. Highly visible. Now they move, as the 9/11 plot begins to move forward towards the day of reckoning, they move to Virginia. And Anwar al-Awlaki then moves to this mosque called the Dar al-Hijra Islamic Center in Falls Church, Virginia. There he helps both al-Madar and al-Hazmi and Hani Hanjour, the senior muscle hijacker on AA-77. He's openly helping these guys, and he's connected to three of the hijackers there. 9/11 happens. Now the FBI begins, finally gets around to interviewing him. Fairly heavily. Now, while he was in San Diego and later in Virginia, he was busted on several occasions for, you know, soliciting prostitutes. He actually got busted twice in San Diego and was put on probation. You know, the ultimate hypocrite. Here's this imam preaching Islamic purity, and he's he's chasing hookers, you know.
Right.
And so while he's in Virginia, another conscientious investigator, and it's unclear as to whether it was from the Bureau, says, you know, we can get this guy for crossing state lines because he's going from Virginia and elsewhere with these hookers, and was working up an investigation just to hold him, just to be able to grab him long enough legitimately so they could question him. And he splits the country. He goes to Yemen. Okay. Now, here's one of the most outrageous things that Paul Sperry has documented. October 10th of 2002, the system works again, and he, al-Awlaki, comes back to JFK. Now, there's a customs, a State Department, a diplomatic security agent, a DSS agent, and they're the agents on the level of FBI agents in the State Department that protect the embassies, and they do brilliant work. And a guy named Ray Fournier, a federal agent, had been tracking al-Awlaki as part of a joint terrorism task force in Colorado. And he actually had worked up a warrant on him because al-Awlaki had lied and committed a passport violation. He actually got a $20,000 grant from the U.S. Agency for International Development to attend college in Colorado State University in the 90s by saying he was born in Yemen. That's a lie. He's born in the United States. So now this Ray Fournier says, we got something to hold this guy on, guys, okay?
Right. Yeah, let's get him.
Right. So al-Awlaki comes back into the flies into JFK with his family and on the 10th of October, and the system works. He seemed to have been on the watch list. They find out about the warrant. They detain him for 3 hours. They call the FBI. And if you go to SperryFiles.com, SperryFiles.com, Paul actually has the incident report, the TEX-2 report, which stands for Treasury Enforcement Communication System report, and it basically says that they get a call from a special agent named Kane notifying them that the warrant issued by the State Department has been pulled back the day before, and they let him go again. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason they let him go was because.
It's unclear why the Bureau, understand, this is Customs doing its job, grabbing this guy, and the Bureau, some guy, some agent Kane from the Bureau, I'm looking at the hard copy of the report in my hand that this Paul Sperry has on Sperry Files, and this agent Kane notifies them that the warrant's been pulled back. So he's basically let go. And Ray Fournier, Paul Sperry did a piece for the New York Post on January 13th, and he basically said, quoting Fournier, we were stunned. He was a high-value target. Everybody was excited about the prospect of hooking this guy up under a criminal charge to motivate a conversation with him regarding his relationship with the 9/11 hijackers, and now he's gone. And later, Sperry reports, he's spirited out of the country on a private Saudi jet, okay? And he ends up in Yemen, where in 2006, he is arrested at the urging of the U.S. government. Now, this is during George Bush's administration, George W., okay? And he's in a Yemeni prison, and we can only imagine the kind of, you know, interrogation he experienced there. But in any case, later in 2000, it's reported that somebody in the U.S. government, and it's unclear exactly who made the call, urged the Yemenis to release him because he was a U.S. citizen and they were concerned about his rights and the fact that he's being held in a Yemeni facility, a criminal facility. Okay.
But there's got to be somebody there somewhere who we can track down. Who's the person who called to say let him out? I mean, there's got to be a record for that. Okay.
Well, that's I'm giving you the headlines. I'm just trying to tease you on what I'm coming up with.
Okay.
That's part of what I'm working on. But
good.
But look, there's some evidence here that the Saudis have been intervening on this guy's behalf on a regular basis, and you know the kind of lobby they have in Washington.